Yeah. To F off, F off, F off, to F off, F back to Russia, to Russia, back to Russia, F off, back to Russia.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
So we have unfortunately fallen so far in terms of the discourse that is considered, I don't want to say typical or acceptable, maybe typical is a good word, not normal and acceptable, but unfortunately what has become typical in the modern sort of discourse of the American right wing, that over the last week we had multiple calls to violence, not only from former President Donald Trump, but his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. And it barely got any attention. It barely received any reporting. I mentioned it Monday when we talked about the whacked Trump rally over the weekend. And it was one of 10 or so clips that I played for you. But it really has not gotten the attention that it should get, given that we know that their followers are not only capable of violence, but they're willing to do violence, as January 6th showed us, among other instances of political violence. So as a reminder, what are we talking about? Here's Donald Trump over the weekend when he called on his supporters to, quote, lay down their very lives to fight Marxism and critical race theory. Remember this?
Anything. Getting critical race theory out of our schools is not just a matter of values. It's also a matter of national survival. We have no choice. The fate of any nation ultimately depends upon the willingness of its citizens to lay down, and they must do this, lay down their very lives to defend their country. If we allow the Marxists and communists and socialists to teach our children to hate America, there will be no one left to defend our flag or to protect our great country or its freedom.
Lay down our very lives to fight Marxism, socialism, communism, and people against people who want to teach critical race theory. This is not only unhinged. It's not only based on things that aren't even really taking place in this country, but it's targeted at a group of people that are willing to get violent. Michael Flynn spoke to a QAnon conference a few days ago. Michael Flynn, one of Donald Trump's former national security advisors, and he was talking about charging the machine gun nest. Again, more violent imagery and language.
Can you to charge the machine gun nest? Maybe I'm just asking you to dig a little bit deeper there, or hold this side of the line, or form up, because we're going to counterattack over here. And that counterattack is we're going to go after school boards. And then those people that then fight them back. We got this problem in Iowa right now. And these are Republicans.
Yeah. So listen, you can argue that part of the rise of Trump was the media gave him too much attention very early in the Republican primary. That's a fair criticism that can be made of corporate media. We're now seeing the opposite problem, which is now that he and they have tens of millions of followers who would still vote for them if he ran again today, he and his associates like Michael Flynn are using violent imagery and alluding to calls for violence, and it's not getting coverage anymore. And of course, the ideal situation would have been the opposite. They should have ignored and modestly ridiculed him in the beginning, which might have prevented a lot of what ultimately happened. But now that this, I mean, you know, it's sort of a neo-fascist movement. Now that it is an obvious and real danger to the United States, they should be doing their job and shining a light on what it is that they are doing. And unfortunately, you know, the people that are already in this circle, they're going to suck it up and absorb it no matter where it airs. That's the reality. So it is a bit of a no-win situation. And at the end of the day, the people that did the inciting really need to be held accountable. And that includes up to and including Trump. And it's not looking particularly like that's going to happen. I have some unbelievable video to show you of a Missouri state senator asking a 14-year-old transgender girl about her genitals. And as vile and disgusting as this video is, this is state senator from Missouri, Elaine Gannon, speaking to 14-year-old trans girl Avery Jackson. Whatever your view is about trans bathrooms or sports or whatever, can we all agree that this line of questioning is not only disgusting, but it also completely exposes the ignorance of the state senator about trans issues? Let's take a look at this.
You're in the ladies' room and then you realize somebody else is in there that's doesn't have a female's, has a male body instead of a female's body. I mean, it just causes some issues there.
Now, do you guys understand that this it's almost genius. It's inadvertently genius. The state senator says, you know, it's really a problem. You've got a girl's room and then all of a sudden someone goes in and they've got a male body part. Right. And it causes a lot of problems and confusion. And the 14-year-old trans girl goes, no, because nobody realizes what's going on. You're not checking out genitals. And the state senator goes, well, people probably don't realize that you are biologically male because you have long hair. Now, the brilliance of this is the entire point. It doesn't matter. Nobody's affected by things they're not aware of. They're not checking genitals in the bathroom. And she looks like a girl, for lack of a better term. So she's like, well, people don't even realize. So then what is the problem? If a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, did it really make a noise? Does it make a noise or, you know, whatever? If you've got a trans girl in the bathroom and it looks like nobody is paying particular attention to the genitals and nobody's eyebrows are raised, then what are we even really talking about here?
Are you going to go through the procedure?
You think we're going around forcing our genitalia in people's face? We're trying to go to a bathroom, and what you want to do is not let people do that? Your whole argument here is the fact that you don't want people to use a bathroom. No one is looking at the pen.
I was seriously just curious.
Right.
That's what this bill is. And getting wrapped up in genitals in bathrooms gets us so far away from that, and it dehumanizes our children.
So you guys get the point. State senator wanting to know, what are your genitals? And do you plan to get the ones that I... So there's two things that go on here. One is a fundamental misunderstanding of sort of like what goes on in bathrooms. That's number one. And that's been, we've been aware of that for years. But number two, it's also sort of the blowing up of small pieces of this entire issue of just treating people with dignity and respect and kind of moving on to solving the real problems we have in society. Trans sports, as I've said before, are there questions to just like figure out about trans sports? Yeah, it's fine. There's leagues that deal with that and sure, figure it out. But it's not really the main issue when it comes to the issue of trans rights and transphobia. The bathroom thing, again, when we look at, is this really a problem? Are these predators that they say will just be lurking everywhere if all of a sudden people are able to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity? It just doesn't happen. It's not actually a problem. And just a very, very vile line of questioning here. If you're just listening, we'll have all these clips up on our Instagram, and you can let me know your thoughts on this by finding me on Twitter at @dpacman. The David Pakman Show is, of course, a viewer-supported program that depends, counts on your membership support. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. It's the new hot thing. It really is. You can use the coupon code WOW22 if you would like a discount off of a membership at joinpakman.com. Let's hear from people in my audience. We do these via Discord, which you can find at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's start today with Yarrow from Brooklyn. Yarrow, you're on the air. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Hello, David. It's Yarrow.
Yarrow. Okay, I apologize.
No worries. Thank you for answering my call. It's good to be on the show.
My pleasure.
The question I actually had was, I live in Brooklyn in the Russian-speaking part of it, and the conversation's been going along. Going around about what's going to happen kind of with Ukraine and Russia. And mm-hmm. I was actually curious about your personal opinion. What do you think will kind of happen kind of in all of this? Do you think that Russia will kind of collapse from sanctions, or do you think it's going to more or less turn into a win? So I'm kind of curious as to your take on it.
I think, by the way, are you like down in Brighton Beach?
Yes, I am. I do live in Brighton Beach.
Beautiful area.
In the summer, certainly.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, listen, I think at this point we're all really just guessing. But I think that regardless of what happens militarily, Russia's economy is going to be in very bad shape for at least years to come as a result of the sanctions.
Absolutely.
I'm not leaning in the direction of Russia's going to take Ukraine. I don't think that that's the most likely scenario. I think sort of. It's not one or the other thing. So there's more than one possibility. But I think the most likely scenario is that there's some off-ramp created for Putin where he saves a little bit of face, but not that much. And Russian troops stay in some regions of Ukraine, like the Donetsk and Luhansk, and sort of like things are just not good for anybody moving forward for many years. Like that, I think, is on balance the most likely outcome.
Yeah, that is the general fear among kind of the Russian and Ukrainian population here as well in Brighton.
Yeah. Are the Russian folks you speak to opposed to what Putin is doing?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. And everything's still good at Coney Island and everything?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, you could kind of tell in Brighton Beach, the atmosphere has been a little bit depressed in the last few weeks. Just yeah. People aren't as cheery, even by Russian standards.
Right.
Ukrainian standards. But, you know, hopefully it'll pass with time.
Fair. All right. Very good. I appreciate the call.
Thank you very much. I hope you have a good day.
There we go. Great to hear from Brooklyn. Always great. Let's go next to, I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to know where to go. How about Logan from Philly? Logan, you're on the air.
Hey there, David. Can you hear me?
Just barely. It sounds like you're underwater and your volume is going up and down.
All right. Do you want to try recalling? Like after another call, I could try switching.
Oh, you know what? Now it just got a little better. What's on your mind?
All right. Yeah. First off, Slava, Ukraine. I kind of have two areas of questions. The first is, do you think Zelensky as a comic will have, what kind of influence he'll do you think Zelensky as a comic will have influence on what is politically viable in America or already changed what is seen as politically viable in America? And do you think artists are better suited for governance as a society because their profession requires them to understand people and human nature in a deeper way than politicians do?
Hold on. There's a lot there. Let's go through it one by one because I don't want to get any of it. So first of all, in terms of what's politically viable in America, we had sort of an actor president already in Ronald Reagan, and then we had a failed businessman in Trump. So, like, I don't even think we need to look at Zelensky to impact what's viable in America. We've already kind of seen that. So that's one piece. The second piece I find more interesting, which is actors, performers, are professionals in how their demeanor and delivery are perceived by audiences. And so that's a very good skill for elected officials to have. So I'm not going around demanding movie stars become politicians in any way, but I think it's definitely clear that some of the skills that performers have do lend themselves really well to being public figures, for sure, elected officials.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're really breaking up, so I'm going to let you go. We were able to hear the first two questions. It's just breaking up. It's very, very bad, but it was great to hear from you. Very, very interesting question, actually. Let's go next to Attack from Denmark. Attack, you are on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking me again. It's been a while.
It has. You know, so, I'm watching a Danish I'm watching the Danish version of House of Cards, this program called Borgen. It's fantastic.
Ah, Bowen. Yeah, yeah. I'm quite well aware of that one.
Great show. Anyway, great show.
Absolutely. Anyway, my question actually was, so I know from your covering that you spend a lot of time talking about like the U.S. reaction to the entire crisis in Ukraine, right? Mm. Now, my question actually is, what do you think actually the role of the EU is going to be in this overarching crisis? And actually, if this Ukraine crisis and the war happening currently is in many ways going to be a watershed moment in transforming the European Union into a truly global actor?
My thought on that is that what the EU does is going to kind of be led by what happens within NATO. I actually think that while these are obviously NATO is one thing and it's a shared defense organization, the EU is sort of a political and economic alliance, and it overlaps with NATO to some degree, but it is not NATO. My belief and expectation is, because what is happening in Ukraine is at its core a military invasion by Russia, which is having economic and political consequences. Tell me if you think I'm naive. I think the EU will, to a great degree, take a signal from what NATO ultimately does or doesn't do, depending on how much longer this invasion continues.
That's interesting. So I would actually, to some degree, disagree, where I think that until now, the EU has taken a lot more initiative than NATO has. So one of the big things that happened on the 27th of February, you know, around the time period when Germany announced their massive hike in defense spending and so forth, is that the EU essentially announced that they were going to facilitate and coordinate the arms exportation of weapons to Ukraine. And you've probably heard about the entire deal, if you know the idea of Polish fighter jets being sent to Ukraine as well, right?
Of course.
That was a proposal originally started by the European Union. It was Charles Michel, one of the leading people in the EU, who said that they were going to do it. Then they found out that they didn't really have the capacity to do it. So that's how the US got involved in trying to buy the jets from Poland and then send them over to Ukraine. But the interesting thing of that is that many of these arms exports and so forth are in many ways facilitated through the EU and not through NATO. And that's something brand new for, you know, an organization that historically there's been a lot of contention around the idea of it having any type of military role. You know, the EU army being obviously a very contentious thing.
But I don't disagree with you, but here's why I don't disagree with you about what has taken place. Here's the reason why I think now NATO may be more of a benchmark than the EU, which is at this point we're getting to the question of what military resources are going to be deployed. Zelensky has now asked Canada and the U.S. and others for a no-fly zone. He has asked for more weapons and more things, which I think now the next steps are really military questions. That's why this is just my opinion. We're just two people with opinions. This is why my thought is in the next 10 to 14 days, NATO may be much more of a guidepost than the EU. But either one of us might be right. We might both be wrong. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think on another level, I mean, from the economic perspective, the EU sanctions against Russia have been quite substantial.
You know,
I mean, it's the U.S. obviously has also done a lot, but considering the Russia's economy is way more connected to the European Union than the United States,
without a doubt,
pretty it's pretty crazy to see like the amount of stuff the EU managed to bring out in an incredibly short amount of time, especially when you think about the fact that the EU always has this reputation of being, you know, a very slow actor that always takes a while to respond to anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's going to be, I mean, I don't want to be, it's going to be interesting to watch. You know, people are dying. So it's not, oh, I'm interested and don't care that people are dying. There's a crisis, but it will also be interesting to see how this is dealt with by the EU in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. And obviously, it's also a very personal thing for me because I have friends in Ukraine. I mean, one of my friends is currently fighting in Kharkiv and has been engaged in combat. So it's, you know, it's a very, very terrible situation to sit here in, you know, my comfort in Denmark and like watch people going through hell. People I know going through
hell. It's horrifying. Horrifying. Let's hope it comes to a conclusion as soon as possible with as little death as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for taking my call, David.
And, my pleasure.
Slava Ukraini.
All right. Thank you very much. There it is. Etka from Denmark. Let's go next to, where are we going next? It's not clear. Let's go to JT from South Carolina. JT, you're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, nice to meet you, David.
Likewise.
I'm a long time watcher. I just wanted to know, have you recently been seeing the things circulating on social media regarding trapped African exchange students in Ukraine and the treatment they've been facing from the authorities there?
I have seen it, and there were some incorrect reports about what was going on and some good reporting as well. I have not read anything about it in the last 3 or 4 days. Is there something in particular going on now that I've maybe missed?
Well, no, it's just I'm calling from South Carolina, and I've been talking with a lot of people in my community, and you know, the Black community, and how they basically perceive this whole situation. And I find that a lot of people in my community, and I'm not by no means speaking for everyone in my community, just the people I've personally spoken with.
Sure.
I find that a lot of them have a hard time garnering sympathy for the Ukrainians, because that's all you see on social media nowadays, with the Ukrainians being under constant threat from the Russians, how the United States is sending billions over there in aid, and how the media is shining this light on this humanitarian crisis, which I agree, it's terrible that's going on. Yet we aren't shining the same light on people suffering in South American countries or in African countries that are facing similar threats. I mean, right now,
That's always an issue. And here's the thing, JT, you know, I've talked on my program endlessly about what determines what makes the news and what doesn't. And there's all these different factors. And one of those factors is certainly, who is it that is being oppressed? That's a factor. 100%. That's a factor. What is the profile of the people being oppressed? Other factors include, is it an oppression that has a clear beginning, middle, and end? And this is why sometimes long-term suffering gets less attention than an individual crisis that's like, okay, Russia is about to invade. They've invaded. There's now an invasion. And it, in principle, at some point, that invasion will stop. That also is a reason why certain things get more attention and other things get less attention. So I think those are all legitimate things to talk about. It doesn't justify in any way what Russia is doing and the value in repelling the invasion. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying.
Thank you. Thank you. And one final thing I wanted to point out is it's as if the Republicans have had a whole 180 about the immigration status of the Ukraine. They want to bring a lot of Ukrainians over here, yet we just expelled over 4,000 Haitians just last year.
I know. If you want to find hypocrisy and fickleness, look at American immigration policy. That is without a doubt. That you can always count on that.
Oh, well, thank you, my friend, for taking my question. I'm finally glad I finally got on the show. I appreciate it so much.
JT, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. There's JT from South Carolina making a number of different important points. Let's go next to Charlie from Toledo. You're on the air, Charlie.
Hi, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you.
Good. I'm at work, so it's pretty loud, so I'll get off pretty soon.
Is there a lathe you could maybe run to make it even louder?
Yes, sir. I'm at a lathe right now.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, what's going on?
Good guess. The question I have is really an observation, which is I hear this talking point a lot about school lunch. You know, it shouldn't be free because kids are going to become socialists.
Right.
But that school, from the student's perspective, all of school is free. So why don't we make them pay tuition for public school? That's basically the observation.
Yeah, and I mean it's absurd on a number of levels, which is also like it's always kind of free to the students because most of them are just getting money from their parents anyway. And also it's all sort of not free because it's all being paid for by their parents' property taxes, or if their parents rent, by the property taxes that their parents' rent is paying for whoever is the landlord. I mean, it's all kind of absurd. Even the use of the word free is kind of silly because most people, once you get past third grade, you kind of understand nothing's really free. It's just who's paying for it. And you're right. Like, there's no big tragedy in kids not having to bring cash for school lunch. We're going to be okay as a society, even with free at the point of sale school lunches.
Yes, sir. I agree. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thank you. Very, very pithy and concise. Okay. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll keep taking calls, so don't hang up if you're holding on to talk to me. We'll be right back. Let's get back to the phones, where many of you are waiting to speak to me. We do these calls via Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go. We are going to try again our good friend Eric from Cancun. Eric, welcome. Let's hope your connection is steady today.
Hi, David. ¿Cómo estás?
Estoy bien. Muchas gracias.
The thing I'm going to tell you last week is that, do you know the concept of Occam's razor?
Yes, I do. Occam's razor, of course.
Because, first of all, in philosophy, a razor is when you want to get rid of an unnecessary theory, when you want to explain something and you don't want complicated explanation. So British William Occam went to explain that the simplest explanation is the correct one if it gives a better or the same results as the other complicated ones.
Yeah, Eric, can I explain it in a slightly different way?
For example...
No, but Eric, what I'm saying is, would you allow me to give my explanation of Occam's razor? Is it okay if I take 15 seconds and do that?
Okay.
Okay. The way I think of Occam's razor is, if we have two competing explanations for some phenomenon, and both explain the phenomenon equally well, but one requires fewer assumptions and is generally simpler, we would tend to favor the simpler explanation. That's how I think about Occam's razor, Eric, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
The
simplest explanation for a bird to fly is that it flaps its wings and becomes lighter than air. The simplest explanation for a boat to float is that its shape can create a vacuum of air that makes it float because it is then less dense than water. Mm-hmm. The simplest explanation for Biden to be president is that in 2020, everyone started to hate Trump because of being awful. And I think that concept would balance out the wackiness of the internet and social media. And I heard that concept in my philosophy class, also from my dad, and in one episode of The Simpsons, when all the adults were drinking the erotic tonic that Homer and Abe were selling, and the kids were wondering why their parents were keeping them out of the house while they were doing the hanky-panky. Lisa said that maybe because they are reverse vampires and they must go home before dark.
Wait a second, Eric, is that a Simpsons episode, or you're saying your dad has an erotic tonic that he drinks?
That's from the second part is from a Simpsons episode. My dad also told me about the concept of Occam's razor and also in my philosophy class.
That's beautiful. Eric, you've really said it all today.
Mm-hmm. And it's because conspiracy theorists want to feel like James Bond or any other super spy from the movies. But instead of learning how to hack enemy computers and martial arts and looking good with a martini and a tuxedo, they're making fool of themselves, don't you think?
I agree with you completely. I agree with you completely. Eric, remind us, how old a guy are you?
I'm 30.
30, okay. All right, Eric, great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Still good. The weather in Cancun is still beautiful as always, I assume.
It's a bit cloudy right now. Would you prefer if I'm your weatherman or your Guillermo?
I actually like hearing about the weather in Cancun. It really lightens the mood.
If you want to come, I have a good Airbnb place if you want.
Okay, yeah, let me follow up about that, okay?
Hey, I'll give you an email. Thank you, bye.
All right, there is Eric going to hook me up with an Airbnb in Cancun. Love it. Let's go next to Ashton from California.
Hey, Dave, can you hear me?
Just barely. What kind of a device are you on?
A really cheap headset.
Oh, all right. Okay, what's on your mind? I'll pump up your volume here.
Thanks. My question is, I know there's a lot. We could view the Ukrainian war, or the Russian invasion, as a net negative, obviously. But mm-hmm. I was wondering, do you think that you could at least concede there might be some positive aspects to this war? And the thing that I keep thinking about is, we hear a lot in the news recently, especially as it relates to the Conservative Party in Canada, how because of this war, there's a lot more scrutiny coming on to political parties like the Conservative Party about the kind of dark money that's funneled into them. And the same thing could probably be said in the United States with funding in the Republican Party from certain Russian oligarchs and whatnot. And do you think that maybe a silver lining in this war might be that there's more scrutiny on that now?
Maybe. You know, if you said to me, obviously, we all concede that what's happening is terrible and there's loss of life and destruction of all sorts of things that we hold dear. If you say, can you find any silver linings? One thing that I am kind of thinking about is we've seen the right in the United States, as well as, you know, the right in Hungary and Brazil and other places, really cozy up to these dictatorial authoritarians like Putin over the last 5 years. And one of the silver linings of what is happening right now, I hope, will be that there will be newfound skepticism and kind of a return to recognizing the disaster that these dictatorial authoritarians are. So that, like, if you said to me, what do I think is potentially the best silver lining? It would be that.
Okay, yeah, I agree. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Very good call. Very good question. Let's go to Kellen from Ukraine. Are you in Ukraine, Kellen?
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I live in Kyiv and I've lived there for the last 11 years. But I actually came back to the U.S. for business on February 1st.
Oh, okay.
But my wife, my cat, and all of her family are still in Ukraine. She actually just got out of Kyiv with an armed guard last week and went to the West.
Wow. And do you, like, so, okay, talk me through the logistics of that. Do you hire an armed guard to help your wife get to the west of the country?
So her dad is fairly well connected. He's a director of a regional hospital in western Ukraine. And
okay.
So he has a lot of people who owe him favors.
I see.
And so he was able to talk to one of his connections who happened to be in Kyiv at the time of the invasion. And he had special military permission to be out after curfew. And he was also allowed to carry a concealed weapon. So he came to our apartment and took our car with my wife and cat and some of her belongings.
So the cat went with your wife. That's good to hear, at least.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Have you abandoned, not you, but have you together as a unit, are you planning to go back to Kyiv when?
As soon as the proper number of Russians have been sent home in body bags.
Wow. So in other words, I mean, you're not abandoning Kyiv. You're just waiting for the violence to end.
Yeah. And I left there on February 1st for business purposes to come back to the U.S.
Yeah.
And was planning on returning, but it's not possible. I mean, it's very hard to even get back into Kyiv right now, even if you want to. Unless you have some kind of military protection. And I'm not a trained soldier. And the Ukrainian government has asked weekend warriors to stay away.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I would be. So I'm respecting that that call from the government.
And are you American married to a Ukrainian woman, or are you Ukrainian?
I'm American, married to a Ukrainian. I have residency in the country.
Okay.
We have a couple of apartments in Kyiv. A rocket that was fired into the city landed near our bank, which is about 2 blocks away from our home.
Oh, wow.
And destroyed quite a bit of it and knocked out all the windows in the surrounding area. So
can you talk a little bit about, you know, in the news we see Russia has bombed random apartment buildings, and then later you'll hear the attempt at a rationalization by saying, well, we believe dissidents and combatants were planning violent activities in those apartment buildings. Do you know anything about that? Is it literally just like all of a sudden just a missile hits an apartment building?
So the territorial defense forces are set up basically in every district in the city. So there are people who have weapons on the ground in quite a few places in the city. But like I just saw the destruction around Lukyanovka metro station, which is about 10 minutes away from our apartment.
Yeah.
And I didn't see any military on the ground near that metro station. But it wouldn't surprise me if there were territorial defense forces in and around that area, because it is a major metro station. It's fairly deep.
So in a literal sense, when Russia says, well, those apartment buildings in or right outside of them had forces, Ukrainian forces.
Every room of every building in Ukraine right now has people that are willing to kill Russians in it.
Right. So it's sort of, yeah, wow. Wow. All right. And then and for the time being, you're just hanging tight in the U.S.
Yeah, I'm in Austin with my younger brother and, you know, still trying to go about business life as much as I can. I've been doing quite a few interviews with local media back in my home state of Nebraska, just trying to get the word out. And this was actually part of what I wanted to ask you about is, I have firsthand experience of living in that country for 11 years, getting to know thousands of Ukrainians and never seeing any kind of neo-Nazi movements or any other than the very far right, which like the Azov Battalion does have very right-wing leanings. And there are some people, but not any more so than there are in any other country in the world. I mean, their Jewish president got, I think it was 71 or 73% of the vote. So I've talked with a lot of people in the U.S. who are just repeating ad nauseum the same Russian propaganda that I got to hear aplenty from Russian media.
And are the people repeating that stuff in the U.S., in your experience, do they tend to be more on the right or the left in the U.S.?
They're all tinfoil hat right-wingers, every single one.
Okay.
So my question is, if I can't convince them, having lived in the country for 11 years, participated in the Maidan Revolution on the ground, and I actually have firsthand knowledge of this kind of stuff, what hope is there for any kind of intelligent conversation about when we should put boots on the ground, when we should go in there, how much protection we should provide them, why we should care about them? If I can't convince them of that, what hope is there of anyone else to convince them?
No, regardless of your views as to what the answers to those questions should be, with the people you're describing, you're not going to be able to have a real sensible conversation about those issues, sadly, but you're just not.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call and for listening.
All right. Well, listen, let's hope everybody in the family and everybody in Ukraine stays safe, okay?
All right. Cheers.
All right. There is Kellen, who lives in Ukraine. Let's speak to Evan from Boston. Evan, you are on the air.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I'm actually a new follower, new listener. So I really appreciate the show, and appreciate your views on things.
Thank you.
And my question is, and you've talked about this a little bit, if you have friends or family that lean Republican, but, you know, kind of bought into the Trump thing and are leaning away from it. But, you know, if he becomes the Republican nominee again, you know, we'll probably vote Republican again. You know, how do you facilitate conversations maybe with folks who aren't, hopefully, in my opinion, right, like not too far gone,
right,
but maybe they are.
You know, I don't know, because I don't have any people like that in my family. Now, my girlfriend does have some people in her family who are hard right Trumpists, but they live in a different part of the country, and neither she nor I really have any contact with them. I mean, we see what they're posting to Facebook, but I don't know what I would say, because I just don't have any people like that in my family.
That's a here's a good question. How does your girlfriend feel about it, as she's the one with the familial ties, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, so like I mean, girlfriend. She thinks that they're wrong about everything and does not engage in any political discussions with them whatsoever.
Gotcha. But still, kind of, does she facilitate
a healthy relationship?
Healthy relationship, yeah.
She has very little relationship with most of those people.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how, I mean, just that's how I'm slowly going. And my wife is, I guess, in a similar position as you, where she has no relationship with these folks at all.
And here's the thing. I don't think any one thing is the right thing to do. I get this question a lot. How should I maintain or not maintain, or how should I confront people? It's all about what kind of a relationship you want to have. Some people legitimately say, I value family no matter what they think, and I want to maintain a relationship. So we will agree either to disagree or to not talk about politics or whatever. I mean, I think my family in Argentina is an example of that, where in Argentina, all my family is basically on the left, but you have people who love Cristina Kirchner and that whole regime, and people who don't like it. And typically, they just agree not to talk about politics at family gatherings, and it sort of works okay.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So I guess the next step for me is to figure out where, and I guess this is where I'm struggling personally, where my values lie. Like,
right.
Am I going to be a person who is like, yeah, family, no matter what, or when your family's pretty, a bunch of jerks, maybe not.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, there's a difference between, there's people who think there should be a 10% flat tax on everything. It's like, okay, all right, well, that's, I mean, we can disagree on that, versus I think the Jews are the devil and are going to hell. That's going to be someone very difficult to put differences aside with, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think at first it was leaning towards the first example.
Right.
And then when Trump came out and kind of made it more normal to be a little bit more racist, to be a little bit more vocal about these views,
yeah,
I started to see a different side of my family as they saw that was okay to say these things, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so now it's like a, you know, and then also as I'm growing older, 28, being more developed cognitively and being able to kind of like recognize these things, as, you know, when you're 12, 14, 15, not being able to recognize these types of things.
Well, let us know how it works out.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the advice.
All right. There's Evan from Boston, and that is going to do it for us today. We will take more calls next week. I look forward to it. It is that time of the week, time for the mailbag. Every day we get hundreds of emails, and we feature around 10 of them a week on the Friday show. If you have something to say, you can email info@davidpakman.com. We'll occasionally feature a Twitter reply or a Facebook post or whatever, really. But info@davidpakman.com is the place to email. Let's start with something ugly. We'll build to the good messages, but we're going to start with something ugly. This is someone named LA Mob Squad, who wrote to me about the subject you and your senile diaper-wearing POTUS will forever be to blame for the collapse of the U.S. and our standing on the world stage. This is very weaponized. I'm warning you. LA Mob Squad writes, I hope you realize these 4 years will be looked back at historically as a humiliating, disastrous period in USA history, directly caused by delusional loons like you, who make up the Democratic Party. Remember, I'm not a Democrat. I don't care about the Democratic Party. You can say completely ridiculous and illogical BS all you want, but we both know we're way past PASSED, the point where you can deflect blame and pretend that the USA, the West's drastic decline, fall on the world stage of this magnitude is falling on the shoulder of anybody other than senile Joe Biden. Wait, gas prices are up everywhere. It's not just Joe Biden. Many countries are figuring out what to do about Russia and Ukraine. It's not just Joe Biden. I don't even know what he's talking about. Going on to say, there's no way you or anybody else can make a case to the contrary while sounding even a tiny bit reasonable. Nope, we're way past that. This U.S. collapse will forever be on your shoulders, and it's effing hilarious in a super disappointing kind of way. You talk about Trump and then bring a guy in and you make us look like an effing weak, crumbling, decrepit, senile old bastard suffering from the severest case of brain rot. Good job, David. Y'all sure know how to pick 'em. Oh, and don't think it's over. We're 1 year in. Wait till China takes Taiwan. Y'all just need to shut the F up forever. You have so much nerve to even still be talking. You should never say another effing word to us again with this joke of a first year that's historically bad. LOL, never again. Sit the F down and be quiet. You've effed enough S up already. I can't wait till 2024. The red wave is going to be breathtakingly glorious, and we both know it. Thanks for sucking, but shut the F up from now on, please. Y'all have been humiliated. Take the loss and sit down. Thanks. And then a bunch of clown emojis. Very, very weaponized. Needs no response, but this is just a reminder. One of the things I like to talk about is there are people with whom we can sit and talk and figure out political differences. What is the role of the U.S. on the world stage diplomatically, militarily, whatever? What should the top tax rate be? How should education be funded? There's people we can disagree with, but talk to. These are the types of people where I believe they are essentially a lost cause. In all practical terms, they are a lost cause. Next email is from Sophie. Sophie says, hey, David, Biden has chosen his words very carefully regarding the role of the U.S. military in Putin's war on Russia, and so has Jen Psaki. This has been the wording. The U.S. will not put military boots on the ground. Boots on the ground is used over and over and over. There are many types of military action the U.S. is capable of outside of literal soldiers on the ground. Yeah, this is a good point, and it's something we've talked about before. I believe that it is not an accidental choice of words or a coincidental choice of words. They are saying boots on the ground because probably everything else is on the table, quite frankly. And, you know, people email me about drones. I don't know. That'd be a big step. But I think that it is not an accident. And there's a reason they are talking about boots on the ground as the line, because they want to leave open the possibility of up to almost anything else short of that. And we may soon see it. Chris writes in about William Barr's interviews. And here's Chris's view. Barr in his interview is simply giving Trump cover to protect him from criminal liability by opening the door for an insanity plea should the prosecution ever make enough headway. Besides that, how could he describe such an obvious state of delusion and then turn around and say he'd vote for such a person? I think the answer to that is Barr's just a horrible person. That alone should send a red flag as to his credibility. He betrays himself, gangsters, one and all. As with most of Trump's loyal supporters, he's most likely being extorted. Yeah, I just don't know about that. I'm just not sure about that. We don't have evidence of that. And it's not clear to me that that's what's going on. So I would be careful about making those assessments. It's conceivable Barr is trying to give Trump cover, but, you know, he's being blackmailed. Let's just be sure we know what we're saying and that there's evidence behind it. I'm just not sure about that. Mark wrote in with a correction. Sir, you are mispronouncing nukes. Dear sir, I'm a big fan of your show, but I recently noticed you have a penchant for mispronouncing nukes as nukes. Case in point, your recent video titled Concerns Grow That Putin Will Use Nuclear Weapons. Pronounced properly, it should rhyme with dukes, not rebukes. Dukes, not rebukes. Okay. I know you're a stickler for pronunciation. Want to make you aware. Keep doing what you're doing, except for nukes. Yeah. Nuclear, 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 nukes, nukes. I hear the difference. Nukes sounds more natural to me, and I'm going to take that liberty, given that English is my second language. I think I'm sticking with nukes. People have written to me before and they've said, David, you use a liquid U when you pronounce the word new. Some people say a new car, new. I say a new car. I think I'm going to stick with it. I like it. Matthew writing in about our sponsor, Nebbia Shower. This is pretty clever. Hey, David, I had a question about your sponsor, Nebbia. Are these the types of shower heads where the water comes out dripping very quietly? Do you have to take a shower 10 to 15 times as opposed to once? I like to look into the elements of bathrooms very strongly before making a purchase. Please let me know. Thank you. Yes, a very, very important question. The Nebbia shower heads are not, the water is not quietly dripping out. It is lower water use, but it powerfully comes out. You could bathe an elephant with it. If you needed to, if you could fit the elephant in your bathtub, you could bathe it. But I get the Trump references. Thank you. Jake wrote in about the MMA fighter, Bryce Mitchell, who recently went on a delusional right-wing rant with right-wing conspiracies about Ukraine. Jake wrote, it's notable that guys like that MMA fighter have changed their thinking so much since the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Back then, it was if we don't fight them over here, we'll have to fight them. Back then it was, if we don't fight them over there, we'll have to fight them over here. Now, under a Democratic president, they have no concern about what's happening in other parts of the world, even though it's obviously atrocious and it could bring war over here. That's Johnny, who I guess also goes by Jake. Yeah, it shouldn't surprise us that there is a stunning level of hypocrisy from a lot of these people. Now, I agree with not putting boots on the ground in Ukraine. Joe Biden has said that from the beginning. He should stick to it. I think it's the right thing. And I think he will stick to that by the letter of what he said. But it shouldn't be ignored that when the right wants to justify military incursions, as they did in Iraq in 2003 and have done elsewhere, and continued involvement in Afghanistan for as long as that went on, nearly 20 years, they often say, it's not that we want to be there, but if we don't fight them there, we'll be fighting them here. And many right wingers accept that. And they say, that's good. That's common sense. That's logic. You're absolutely right. In this particular case, they're not saying it. They're just saying, no, we shouldn't do it. While, by the way, at the same time, saying Biden is being weak. They would criticize Biden if he, quote, started a war, as they love to say. And at the same time, they say Biden is weak for not doing enough. The point is, these are bad faith actors. You can't please them. And so we should pay enough attention to know what they're saying. But I don't think we need to take them very seriously. They're not good faith actors. Next email today is about RT's YouTube channel, RT being Russian state media propaganda. Hi, David. Today, I love this. The delightful naivete of this email. Hey, David, today I found a Russian-backed YouTube channel called RT. All of the videos are pro-Russia and anti-West. If you read the comments on the videos, they are all pro-Russia as well. Many of the misleading videos on this channel are disgusting. I just wanted to get your opinion on if you think YouTube should shut it down and join the other hundreds of companies that have already pulled out of Russia. Yeah, so first of all, I envy someone who has not been suffering through knowing that RT exists and the content that they produce for the last decade. Now, as many of you know, I used to appear as a guest on RT when invited, thinking I'll go wherever and give my views. But once it became clear to me that like barely anyone was watching this stuff in the US and it's not even worth my time to appear, nor do I want to be associated with it in any way, I just started turning down invites, and I've probably turned down, I don't know, 8 invitations there over the last few years. I would love instead to just not even be aware that there was this propaganda thing being disseminated in the US. Now, that being said, for the person emailing, YouTube demonetized the RT channel and marked it as Russian state media, and RT America ceased operations. So it's over for now, at least. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Last email today is from Julia about the term strongmen. Julia says, hey, David, please stop referring to Machiavellian madmen as strongmen. It's a misleading connotation when what they actually are is cowardly, psychopathic bullies who con and rely on their minions to brutalize and oppress others for their own narcissistic gain. That term gives people a way to positive idea about them and allows the weak-minded a rationale to follow them. Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, sometimes I'll refer to dictatorial authoritarians. I think the problem is sometimes they're not literally dictators. So to just call them dictators isn't accurate, which is why I'll often say authoritarian strongmen. But it would be good to have a different term, maybe dictatorial authoritarians or wannabe dictators instead of strongmen. I'm open to that. I'm open to that. But a good point, Julie. I appreciate you emailing in about that. If you have a topic for discussion for the mailbag, you can email info@davidpakman.com. Please don't abuse the email address. In all seriousness, we get a lot of crap in there. But you can email info@davidpakman.com. We have a great bonus show coming up for you today. You get access to the bonus show by becoming a member at Join.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me. For all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT, in sound, from way out.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT. Word to your mother.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
The implications and consequences would be if China provides material support to Russia as it conducts brutal attacks against Ukrainian cities and civilians. And obviously that is something we will be watching and the world will be watching.
As President Biden speaks for nearly 2 hours with China's Xi Jinping, we'll look at China's response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and what it could mean for U.S.-Chinese relations. We'll also speak to Professor Alfred McCoy, author of To Govern the Globe, World Orders and Catastrophic Change. Then to Western Sahara, Africa's last colony, for an exclusive interview with a leading Sahrawi human rights defender, Sultana Khaya. She's been under de facto house arrest by Morocco's occupying forces for nearly 500 days. During that time, she's been the victim of rape and torture.
It's not the suffering of just 482 days, but it's suffering from a long period since 1975.
Last week, a group of U.S. activists entered Sultana Khaya's home, breaking a 482-day siege. We'll also speak to Professor Stephen Zunis about how U.S. support for the Moroccan occupation of Western Sahara has emboldened Vladimir Putin. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine has defied Russia's ultimatum that it surrender the besieged city of Mariupol by 5 a.m. Moscow time as attacks and casualties mount on day 26 of Russia's invasion. Mariupol officials said Russian forces bombed an art school Sunday that was sheltering 400 displaced people. Many residents of Mariupol remain trapped amidst heavy Russian bombardment and dwindling supplies.
We have been in a basement for 11 days. This is the 25th day of war. We have been counting every one of them. We hope for the best, to live as humans. The apartment has been broken. Everything is broken. Where can we go from the basement? We're cooking at a fire. For now, we have some food and some firewood. In a week, we will have nothing, no food at all. What should we do?
A powerful blast in the capital, Kyiv, earlier today destroyed a sprawling shopping mall. The number of victims from that attack is not yet known. Meanwhile, Moscow said it used hypersonic missiles twice in its attacks on Ukraine over the weekend. Residents in the city of Sumy were told to take shelter after Russian shelling hit a chemical factory, triggering an ammonia leak. Dozens of staff who've been working under Russian orders at the Chernobyl nuclear plant have been relieved and replaced by other Ukrainian personnel after working for around 600 hours. The UN said some 10 million people have been forced from their homes since the start of Russia's invasion. About a third of those are refugees, while the rest are internally displaced. The World Food Program warned Ukraine's food supply chain is falling apart. Amidst the intensified fighting, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged direct talks with Vladimir Putin, but warned if those fail, quote, that would mean this is World War III.
The time has come for a meeting. It is time to talk. The time has come to restore territorial integrity and justice for Ukraine. Otherwise, Russia's losses will be such that it will take you several generations to recover.
Over the weekend, Turkey's foreign minister said Russian and Ukrainian teams made progress on their negotiations to end the war. Zelensky's also suggested Israel could help mediate peace talks between the two countries. President Joe Biden met virtually with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Friday for the first time since Russia's invasion. The White House said Biden...